from the heart of the Forest City, this is a Craig Needles podcast brought to you by Lexus of London. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
Craig Needles podcast on a Tuesday, and you can, of course, find us at classicrock981.com, londonnewstoday.ca. Those are the places to find us. And, of course, we're brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London. And I want to take a few minutes on this podcast to talk about the safety in the City of London, the way that we build our community here in the City of London. To do that with us today, we are joined by Jared Fisher, who is a candidate in the Ward 4 City Council race. So I appreciate you coming on, Jared. And also with us is Jason Slaughter. And you may not necessarily know the name Jason Slaughter, but I can promise you, if you're on YouTube a lot, if you're on Twitter a lot, you definitely know Not Just Bikes, which is an account that talks about city building. And I've seen a lot of great stuff from that account on YouTube, on Twitter, whatever it happens to be. So I thought that Jason would add an interesting and very much worthy voice here to this conversation. So Jared, Jason, both of you, thank you so much for doing this. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for having us.
Here's the first thing I want to talk about. And we mentioned this before we started recording. But I want to talk about something that happened not terribly far from where Jared's running for office, which is in the east end of the city. There was a hit and run collision over the weekend. London police are investigating it as we speak. I'm not going to get too deep into the investigative details because that can change pretty quickly, and we want this podcast to stand up. But go to londonnewstoday.ca for the very latest on it. But I wanted to ask you both about creating cities that are safe, because we had a situation where someone is biking home from work at 4 in the morning, and they get hit by, according to London police, a blue sedan of some kind. And the poor guy passes away. He dies. And this is someone who just wanted to get home via bike. And whoever hit him, according to London police, just drove away and didn't even stop to see if he was going to be okay. So what was the reaction that you had to this, Jared, as we have this story kind of unfolding for us from the weekend here?
Well, it's tragic. It's depressing. And most depressingly, it's not really surprising. It's actually the fourth hit and run in London this year. And we're not even three quarters of the way through the year. It's a devastating incident, and something we as a city should be ashamed of and have to work towards preventing happening again.
Yeah, it's really too bad. And I feel for this guy's family, obviously, and there's a GoFundMe set up again, all that stuff's at londonnewstoday.ca. But Jason, you and I were talking before we got on here. I said, what do you say about it? Because it's just, it's sad and it's enraging. But what you responded with was you talk about building safer cities where this is less likely to happen. So how do we do that in your estimation?
Yeah, I think this is one of these things that's kind of frustrating when having these conversations about cycling in Canada, whether in London or anywhere else for that matter, and lots of the US too, is that cycling is looked at as this thing that, you know, a bunch of middle-aged guys wearing Lycra do, and it's simply not. Like, riding a bike is a low cost and efficient way to get around. And certainly if I were working at a factory, getting off at 4 o'clock in the morning, I would cycle home too, because like it's a heck of a lot cheaper than driving and owning a car. And it's a nice, efficient way to get home. But we're not building a city that makes it safe for people like that. And that's tragic.
And Jared,
I can speak to that from personal experience. Yeah. I also bike to work every day during the summer, in spring and fall. And I would actually do it in the winter as well, but we don't have the infrastructure for that. And if I followed city plan, which I did originally when I first started cycling to work, part of my route takes me down Southdale, which is officially a 60 kilometer an hour zone with a painted bike lane and a arrow at one point. Cars are going over 80 kilometers an hour sometimes, and literally every single day I'd fear for my life. And luckily, a fellow cyclist told me a different alternative route, and now I take that and I feel much safer. But it's terrifying biking in this city. And as Jason said, it's for many people the most economical and sometimes the only economical way to get around. And we have to make it so that they can get around in a dignified and safe manner.
Is that why you're running, Jared? Tell me why you're running for city council in Ward 4.
It's among the reasons why I'm running. There's a whole bunch. I live in Ward 4, obviously, and I see the social issues that are rising, that have arisen for over many years, the homelessness, drug use, as well as the housing crisis, which is nationwide, but also, again, affecting us here in Ward 4, as well as transportation issues, which is something that's very strong in my platform, both transit as well as cycling lanes.
Good reasons.
And they're all sort of underpinned by affordability issues, as you can see.
Yeah, yeah.
Housing affordability, getting around the city in an affordable manner, and people who fall through the cracks.
It's all definitely woven together. I would agree with that entirely. And Jason, you know, you're in the Netherlands. You mentioned sort of biking infrastructure in Canada, biking infrastructure in the United States. What sort of conversations do you think we should be having about the way that we create our city and build our city in London right now, during a time when we have a voice as to who is going to be sitting on council about a month from now, a little bit more than that, when we go to the polls and can vote for people? What type of conversations do you think we should be having?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a complex conversation. I'm originally from London, Ontario. That's why I've, mm-hmm. you know, I'm in touch with you folks in the first place. I grew up there. I left when I was 18, but and now I live in Amsterdam, but I've lived in lots of different places. But what I've learned is that the design of a city makes an absolutely huge difference to the way that people live. It's absolutely critical. Not just in the way they get around, although that's an incredibly important part of it as well, but just the people they meet, the things they're able to do. And I think ultimately this all comes down to a freedom of choice. Like, I know I found it frustrating in London, Ontario, especially when I was a teenager, that there was no choice but to drive. I was out in Oak Ridge, but and I've found that when I've lived in other cities that provide alternatives, that provide things within walking distance, that provide high quality rapid transit, that provide safe bicycle paths, that the freedom that you have to get around in different ways, the freedom that you have to, you know, shop locally instead of driving to Costco, it's quite frankly a better way to live, which is exactly why we live where we live. So I think the conversation really has to be around, like, how do we want to live, and not to, like, say what the way we've done things since, you know, after the Second World War is the only way that things could possibly be done. It's simply not. I mean, London was a very different city 100 years ago than it was 50 years ago. And the one constant across cities is that things change. And I think now is an opportunity, when we know the things that we know and we see the international examples and we see the data that's come out of cities all around Canada and in other places as well. There are better ways to design a city than what we've done over the past 70 years. And I think now is the time to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I would think so as well. Jared, is there anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, definitely. So actually, that sort of touches on another reason of why I'm running. It's kind of a selfish reason, but as Jason said, he left London when he's 18, and that's a very common story. People who grow up in London or have families in London, their children will grow up, and once they graduate school, either high school or university or college, they move away because they have other cities that have those opportunities and that lifestyle that we do not offer in London. And I have a 9-month-old son. I see it as I have a clock ticking. I have 18 years. I'm not going to be city councilor for 18 years, but I want to get the ball rolling. And I have 18 years to start that process to make this a city that, when my son Bruce is old enough to start making decisions about where he wants to live his life, he wants to stay close to home and he wants to live near me. And I know we have a lot of other parents in London who feel the same way. They don't want to have their children move away. I'm sure Jason's parents probably thought the same way when he first moved away. We like to have our family near us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
we need to build cities that,
I think a lot of people would like. Full disclosure, I'm a huge Springsteen fan, and I tried to talk my wife into naming our son Bruce, and she was not down with it. I'm also a huge Broncos fan, and my son's name is Peyton. So as you can see, I did have a little sway. So, you know, I look at this and think to myself, this is something that it should be obvious in a lot of corners. And I know that this turns into an us versus them type of thing if you want cycling, that means that you should, that you don't want cars, or no one's allowed to own a car anymore. They're going to take away my car from me, or whatever it happens to be. I don't think that's true. I just think there should be some optionality as to whether you want to own a car or not. I think there
not just optionality, but usually, and Jason's actually had a video about this in the Netherlands, driving is usually better in these cities because you obviously have fewer cars on the road because people are taking other options.
Right.
And you can look at it at the other extreme. You'll have plenty of undeveloped countries where they don't have public transit, where they don't have bike networks, and traffic there is atrocious. They'll have literally 3 hours of rush hour traffic to get to work because everyone's in their car. It's a large population area, and cars just aren't that efficient. They're very inefficient. So we need to have these other options to make it better for the people who do want to drive.
Yeah. And I've got no problem with that. I think, okay, if you want to have your car, okay, feel free. But maybe you're someone who wants to take your bike to work a few days a week and not every single day, depending on what you're doing after. There's just the optionality needs to be there. And right now we're lacking in that department, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, when I see people cycling here in the Netherlands, or even when I go to Scandinavia, you know, it's not just places that don't have winter either.
Right.
When I go to Scandinavia, I see lots of people cycling around too. But the type of people who are cycling is very different than what I ever see in London, Ontario. It's kids, you know, as young as 6 to 8 years old who are cycling on their own. Literally every single high school student cycles to school here. It really is basically all of them. It's actually crazy how many it is. And I also see like people in their 70s and 80s cycling, you know, and maybe they're not on a normal bike. Maybe they're on a tricycle or something like that because they've got balance issues in their 90s. Like literally, I see 90-year-olds cycling around here. It's just a totally different way of looking at transportation. And ultimately, it's about giving people more choices. Like, and what Jared was saying is absolutely true. Like, we know it, you know, it's not the 1960s anymore. We have a lot of data about transportation that we didn't have back then, when a lot of these, you know, arterial roads in London were being built, you know, 70 years ago. We know now that the only solution to car traffic is viable alternatives to driving. That's it. There is no other solution. You cannot build your way out of it. If it were the case, then the 401 through Toronto would be smooth flowing all the time, and it's not. It's rammed even at 2 p.m. on a Tuesday. So we have to look at this and say, this is just not working. Like, when Wonderland Road is completely rammed with cars every morning, and it was going to be, you know, tens of millions of dollars to fix it that the city can't afford, we have to step back and say, maybe we're going about this the wrong way. And now is the time. We have the data. We know this. And now is the time to make our cities better.
Well, I will say, to the credit of this version of council, they were said, oh, yeah, the price to widen Wonderland Road is $200 million. And their response was, no, thanks. We're not going to do that. Which, right call. Good decision.
It was a good decision, but at the same time, Wonderland is rammed with traffic, so you can't just leave it. But I think it's fairly well understood now, at least by urban planners. I don't know if it's seeping down to the general public, but it's fairly well understood how we build better cities. And I think London honestly has some great bones, in Jared's ward as well. Like it's fantastic that. It has a lot of potential, let's say, in order to be a modern walkable city, because it was built that way, you know, when it was built 100 years ago.
Yeah, we'll talk about Old East in just a second, but I want to look at, you know, the way that we build the city from the finance perspective, and to me, mm-hmm. even if you have no intention of ever riding a bike in your entire life, this is the part that should interest you. It's a lot cheaper if we build cities where stuff is close together and people don't have to take their cars to get everything. It's a lot less expensive.
Significantly. It's not even close. It's huge difference.
So
personal perspective or from a city perspective? Because it's both. True for both.
Yeah, it's absolutely both. Because, again, if you never want to ride a bike in your life, you want to take your car places, okay, that's fine. There's going to be people who want to do that. That's okay. But if more people are willing to walk to places or take their bike to places as opposed to being on the road, it costs us less to build our city, and therefore your tax bill is going to go down. And we should all think that your tax bill is going to go down is a good thing that we should be pursuing. At least in my
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's something on my platform as well, saying we need higher density buildings. We need more mixed use zoning so that we can have that more dense city that is much more tax efficient, where you're using the same infrastructure for 50 people paying their taxes instead of for 5.
Yeah. A video Jason did a while ago, and I shared it on my Twitter feed, and I think you'd done this some time ago, but I just happened to stumble across it, I want to say earlier this summer. But you talk about the cost of, you know, who pays for it when we sprawl and we build sort of out further than we need to. And the answer is everybody. It becomes expensive for all of us. And the numbers become very clear, and use a couple of different communities as examples. I think one was in Louisiana. This is just off the top of my head. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
That's correct.
Oh, yeah. So it's very clear that there are specific examples of, hey, when you sort of spread everything out, this is going to cost you more and it's going to make your city worse. And again, I'm not saying that we should never have anyone live in Northwest London ever again. That's ridiculous. That's not how I feel. But if we have more options in the core, people are going to take them and the city is going to be better because of it.
These aren't revolutionary new ideas either. Jason was talking about how our city was built differently 100 years ago, and that's true. And also Amsterdam, which is sort of the poster child for this, it was built differently 50 years ago. So we don't have to be innovative here in London. We can follow and learn from plenty of other successful cities that have already implemented a lot of these changes, and we can just sort of plug and play.
Jason, people are going to hear this and some of them are going to say, well, Craig and Jason and Jared, Amsterdam is a lot smaller place than Canada is. So therefore, this stuff works in Amsterdam, but doesn't work in Canada. What would you say to them, Jason?
Well, I mean, that's the most common objection I get to people that don't know anything about this. But the truth of the matter is that the majority of Canadians, the vast majority of trips, car trips in Canada are only a few kilometers long. That's just fact. Even if you use your car to get to work every single day and it's a long commute, there are still so many other trips that you take in a day that aren't that long commute. Like you go to the grocery store, you go to doctor's appointments, you take your kids to school, and there's so many different trips that are done. And when you look at the combined number of trips, most trips are extremely short. And one of the things that always kind of surprised me in London, Ontario, is that when I would come back and visit my family, I would, you know, go drive everywhere. I'd drive to the grocery store, say, or I'd drive to the mall or to the shops. And it always seemed to take a really long time. But when I looked at it on the map, like the actual number of kilometers, it was like 1 or 2 kilometers, which if I were here in Amsterdam, there's no way I would drive that. Why would I? I would take a tram, or I would take a bicycle, or maybe I'd walk it because it's a nice walk. But I'm the same person, but I wouldn't do that in London. And it really is not about the distance at all. It really comes down to the way things are designed. And that is something we can change. That is something that is changeable. And that is something that we've put rules and regulations around how we build for decades. But those things can change. And we can look at them and say, you know, we could do this differently, and we could have a city that works better for a larger number of people. And it is possible.
So give me,
it's not about distance.
Give me a difference between London and Amsterdam when it comes to why is that walk more welcoming in Amsterdam than it would be in London?
Yeah, I don't even need to do that in Amsterdam. Sometimes I don't like talking about Amsterdam because people get distracted. They think about, you know, the 17th century canal ring, and they think, oh, we're nothing like that. Well, most of Amsterdam was actually built after the 1960s. People don't realize that because when they come in here and on holiday, they never get out of the, you know, the Disneyland area in the center. Emily, let's just talk about downtown Toronto, where I lived for many years as well.
Yeah.
Like I would gladly walk a kilometer or two in downtown Toronto. Why not? Because I'll pass 35 shops and a couple of restaurants, and I've got a nice wide sidewalk and some trees to shade me from the sun or to block the wind if it's winter. And it's actually really enjoyable. There's things to see. You know, I've even run into friends on the street when I'm walking somewhere in downtown Toronto. And it's really enjoyable.
I can even just jump in for a second and say, you can even say that here in London, Wortley Village. Sure. It was voted one of the best neighborhoods in all of Canada.
Yep. Fantastic example. So if I think about if I were to walk, I don't know, along Fanshawe Park Road, right, on my way to Masonville, compared to if I was walking through Wortley Village. I mean, it's night and day difference
that is
in
true.
That experience, you know. The one is going to be, you know, if I'm along Fanshawe Park Road, I'm next to, you know, a six-lane road with all these high-speed cars, and it's really loud, and it's and you feel the pollution too, and even the heat off the car sometimes. It's like a wind tunnel. I'm on this little sidewalk, and even when I get to the shop, there's a huge parking lot that I need to cross with cars going in and out. This is just a place that everything about it says you're not welcome here. Whereas if I'm walking in Wortley Village, I'm walking by a bunch of houses that are closer to the street. There's lots of trees around. There's, there's a nice sidewalk there. The cars are driving a lot slower. And I'll pass lots of interesting little shops along the way too. I can window shop. I can stop on a bench and let people watch for a while. I mean, that's a night and day situation. So yeah, again, I think that's a great example, Jared, because I think Wortley Village is a fantastic place. And here's the problem. It's actually not legal to build Wortley Village today. And that's fundamentally the issue, right? Like, if you wanted to build Wortley Village, there is a long list of regulations that we put in place since the Second World War that make it impossible to build it. But if you take almost anyone from London, Ontario, and drive them over to Wortley Village and get out of the car and walk around, they'll say, this is nice. Why can't we build more places like that? Even if you don't want to live in Wortley Village, even if you don't care about Wortley Village, why shouldn't we be allowed to build another Wortley Village? And that's fundamentally the issue here.
Yeah, so the regulations you're talking about, I suspect, would be parking minimums. That's on the list.
Yep, that's one of them.
Yeah. What else? What else would be on the list of, hey, this is one of the rules right now, and we've got to get this out of here, do you think?
How close you can get to the road? Lot sizes? Or sorry, I feel like that was that directed towards Jason?
It's, whoever wants to talk about it.
Not me. Go ahead, yeah, Jared. Go. I think we could all come up with the same list, but...
Yeah, so I was going to say lot sizes, how close you can get towards the road, how close houses can be together, parking minimums, as you said, multi-use zoning, so you can get shops in the same neighborhoods as you have houses. Those are just the ones I quickly rattle off the top of my head.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. So, I think that's one of these ones, that the multi-use one is one that a lot of people, I don't think most people realize any of this stuff, but I don't think they fully appreciate the way that zoning works these days in Canada. That you can't have houses next to the shops. I mean, unless they happen to be coincidentally butted up near each other because of the way the zoning worked. In general, shops need to be in one area, houses need to be in another area, doctor's offices need to be in a third area altogether, and offices need to be somewhere else. And you look at this and you're like, that means that the vast majority of people could never be able to walk to a shop. It just makes it impossible. That it means that most people can't walk to their doctor's office to go to a doctor's
in my office. Neighborhood. I have a corner store, which I can walk to, which I fully appreciate, but that's it. That's literally it. And it's because it's been grandfathered in for decades. You would not be able to build that shop now.
The only reason that shop exists is because that was built before zoning. It was probably built in the 1920s or around that time is my guess. I think that's sad. I think why? There are various reasons why that was done, why those changes were made in the 1960s, 1970s. But we know a lot more since then, and we know that this is not the right way to go. We know that this causes problems such as traffic, because when nobody can walk to the shop, when nobody can bike to the shop, even if they wanted to, then everybody has to drive. And if everybody has to drive for every single trip, whether it's the commuting or whether it's the doctor's appointment or whether it's going to a shop or even visiting a friend's house, that's when the roads get full. It's really that simple.
So, and I love talking to neighbors here when I'm going canvassing door to door, and I tell them this is part of my platform, and I'll say, yeah, like, I'd love to be able to have it so that you can walk around this corner and go to a bakery, this corner over here and go to a cafe, go to the park over there and like, enjoy your coffee just that you walked over and picked up. And this little light bulb goes up above their head, being like, wow, that would be incredible. Why can't we do that? And then I have to explain to them why we can't and why that's why I'm running, so we can actually change these things.
So that brings me back to, we were talking earlier about Old East, and I want to talk specifically about the stretch from Adelaide, and you're going east, not quite as far as Quebec, but I think people in the neighborhood and people in the city know the stretch I'm talking about, essentially east of police headquarters there. That could be that neighborhood. And there's a lot of building going on and has been going on not terribly far from there. There's more scheduled. I think that's all great. That could be that neighborhood, but we've got to show some will and some gumption, I believe, to make that happen. And I know that there's going to be some social issues there, but I would suspect, Jared, that's something that you're hearing about quite regularly when you're knocking on doors in the neighborhood.
Absolutely. So we have a couple approaches to that. I'm not going to go too far into the social support section because that's not really something that Jason will probably care too much about. But obviously, we do have to give these people a lot of help. They need more shelter capacity and they need more wraparound services. Part of that is we need to spread that around so it isn't just on one sort of strip along Dundas, as you know. On top of that, though, we need more support for the actual businesses. And we have a bike lane, which is fantastic. So pulling this back to the original topic, the bike lane is great for businesses. We have that proven worldwide in Canada as well, but we're not really getting the full use of it because of the issues we have in that neighborhood, people aren't feeling safe leaving their bikes out. And I think if we can install some bike lockers, this is a sort of a minor point on my platform, but I think it'll have a huge impact on the businesses there. If we can get some bike lockers and other aspects of, making it so people feel safe leaving their bikes there, and the bike will be secure when they go in and have a meal or go shop for half an hour and come back. that'll really boost the businesses in the area, as well as you said, just more construction, getting more feet on the ground, more walkability, more eyes on the street.
Well, people want to own businesses that are, you know, from a cafe, restaurant perspective, things along those lines. They want to own businesses that people are wanting to go to. I'm not an economics major, but I think that's the case. Jason, the best way to make that happen is to have it so those businesses are close to where they live, I would suspect.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's not cars that shop places, it's people. And you can, if you have a place that people are walking along, especially if you have a place that people want to walk along anyway because it's nice, those people are much more likely to see the shop, to go in the shop, you know. So it's not going to work if it's a, I don't know, maybe it's not going to work, maybe it will. Maybe it's not going to work if it's a washing machine place or something, right? And people aren't going to be walking out with it on their back. But there's so many different businesses that could work really well and do work really well when you get increased foot traffic. It makes a huge difference. And in order to do that, you need to have an area that's enjoyable to be in, that's just fundamentally enjoyable to be in, not a place that you're forced to go to. And I know London over the years would try to like get people to drive downtown or something like that. And I don't think that's sustainable. I think you need to look at this as, say, there's going to be a bunch of people living here. They're going to be within walking distance. They're going to be within cycling distance. Maybe they're going to be on a transit line or a bus line to come in here. And we should really target towards those people and make the area as enjoyable as possible so that those people who live nearby can enjoy the area, and then you can turn that into successful businesses as well.
Yeah. Well, to your point, look at it from a marketing perspective, right? How much money do marketers pay to get eyeballs on their ads? And yeah, if you have just a nice, enjoyable walk down a business district, you have people choosing to walk past your businesses every single day.
Yeah.
And obviously, that would be good for businesses. It's common sense.
I will say that I think that marketing people paying for advertising is very good, and they should always do it all the time.
Sponsoring YouTube videos too.
Yeah. Whichever way they want to do it. It's true though, and it's something that I think that we have as a collective have lost sight of a little bit. I'm going to wrap this up because I've taken up a lot of time for both you guys here, but I'm going to give you each sort of a last word here. We're looking at city building, sort of what we want London to be or any other city to be. Jason, I'll give you the first chance here. So what are the things that people in your estimation should be thinking about and prioritizing when it comes to what kind of city London is?
Well, I think, you know, honestly, what I would recommend people doing is go online and look at a picture of what London, Ontario looked like in, say, 1910, 1920, because you will not recognize it. It's a stunningly beautiful city. The downtown was an absolutely gorgeous place and every picture has dozens and dozens of people walking around. I think that cars are incredibly useful tools, and I drive myself. But I think we went a little too far. The pendulum swung a little too far in one direction. And I think that if we can look at what London used to be, and we look at the potential, and the bones are still there, certainly around downtown and the older areas surrounding it, I think there's the potential to be a stunningly beautiful city. But we need to focus on walkability, making things easier to walk. More getting back to mixed-use zoning that we used to do, you know, 100 years ago, and start to look at this and say, you know, how can we make this just fundamentally a more enjoyable place to be? And I think if we look at that, and then we say anything we build on top of that, as long as it's compatible with walking, we can build something great again. I mean, the people who built London, Ontario hundreds of years ago, they weren't urban planners. They built the place they wanted to be. And I think we've lost sight of that. And there's a lot of potential.
Jared, last word goes to you. You want to talk campaign? You want to talk about your priorities where we wrap up here?
Sure, yeah. I'll just touch on what Jason said. Yeah, we just need to build a much more enjoyable city to live in. We need it to be walkable. We need to make it... people sort of give up on London in some way, saying we're a small regional city. But we can become a destination. We can become something that people actually desire to live in and attract young people and young families. And that's what I'm running for. There's a lot more to my campaign than just bike lanes and transit and walkable neighborhoods.
Course, yeah.
So I hope you can check out my website. It's fisherforward4.ca. The first four there is FOR. So fisherforward4.ca. And you can reach out to me on any of my social media handles. I'd love to talk with anyone. And I hope you vote for me on October 24th.
Well, there you go. Well, thank you both you guys for having what I think was a fascinating conversation and sort of a good look at sort of what we are and what we want to be. I want to thank both of you for doing it. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
That's Jared Fisher, Ward 4 City Council candidate here in the City of London, talking with us about infrastructure and the kind of city we want. And also in on that conversation was Jason Slaughter, who's behind the Not Just Bikes YouTube feed and Twitter feed. Strongly suggest you check both of those out. Some very, very interesting things there when it comes to city building. And the thing I keep coming back to is, again, you may never want to ride a bike in your life. You may not have no interest in that whatsoever. You may not even want to walk to a grocery store. Okay, you don't have to. It's cheaper if people have the opportunity to do those things on your tax bill. I think you should be interested in the your tax bill part of this, right? I certainly am. I certainly am. And I know that we're going to have people tell us, hey, wait a minute. You guys are saying no one should drive cars anymore. That's ridiculous. I drive a car. I'm not giving up my car anytime soon. I like driving. It's a thing I enjoy doing in certain circumstances. In certain instances. But we're going to be better off when it comes to the affordability of the city if not everyone has to do it all the time. We're going to be better off if our transit system's better. We're going to be better off if there are easier and better ways to bike to work and walk to work and whatever it happens to be. Or not even to work. What if you're working from home and there are better ways to go out and grab a lunch in the middle of your workday as opposed to getting in your car? That's the sort of stuff we're talking about. I do want to remind you the Craig Needles podcast is brought to you by Lexus of London. Lifestyle with a drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting for you at the award-winning Lexus of London. Luxury defined. You can pick out yours today at the award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warrencliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. One other thing I wanted to add on the podcast today as we wrap things up. We're going to talk about this more on Friday. We have the Friday Roundtable coming up. We're going to be joined by former city councilors Roger Karanji and Cheryl Miller. Also, Steve Holland, the president of Keep You Local 101, going to be here to talk about a bunch of different things with us. One of the things we're going to talk about is Khalil Ramal's platform, which came out today. I'm still hoping that I'm going to, well, not still hoping, I know it's going to happen. I'm going to get him on the podcast at some point to talk about his platform now that's out, what he likes about it, what he wants to see change here in the City of London. So that's going to come out, I'm thinking next week, but I'll tell you for sure once we know for sure. But I'm going to break down the platform coming up with the three folks that I mentioned on Friday's podcast, because what happened today, and I will say that Khalil did call me to apologize. What happened today was a little bit strange. That there was a platform launch event, and a couple of my colleagues from different outlets were there. But I would say there are five, quote-unquote, main media outlets in the City of London. So us here at Blackburn News, and I'll peel back the curtain a little bit. Also CTV, also CBC, London Free Press, and 980 CFPL, of course, the place I used to work. So there are five, quote-unquote, main media outlets when it comes to covering stuff within the City of London. 60% of those five, three out of five, were not at that platform event. And as far as I know, none of us got a news release. The folks that were there just happened to find out via random circumstance that such a platform release was going on. Compare and contrast that with Josh Morgan's platform release. And I received multiple media advisories about this. And calls from people on the campaign team, whatever, saying, hey, you know, make sure you're going to be at this. And I wasn't the only one who got that. It wasn't just me. It was other members of the media that got those very same calls, very same emails, because they wanted to make sure that we were there to cover their platform's release. That's called good campaigning. That's called smart campaigning. Right? That's just how you should do this. That's what the job should be about if you are doing media for someone's campaign. And because of this, I think that it calls into question what went on when it comes to the choices made for launching this platform. Are you going to be able to get the media on side with something if you are the mayor of London, as opposed to running for mayor of London, if you can't even get us to a platform launch event? That's a question I've gotten. Again, I will say, to his credit, Khalil Ramal saw my concern about that on Twitter earlier today. We're recording this on a Tuesday afternoon. And called me and said, look, Craig, this is a screw up on the part of our team. I apologize. So to his credit, he's owned the mistake. He's apologized to me. And I know that he has called some of my colleagues in the media and said the very same thing to them. So he's owning it. And I'll give him credit for that. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's a good thing. Own your mistakes. I'm a big believer in that. Big believer in that. So that's good. And I'm glad that's happened. But that was a bit of a questionable set of circumstances for a platform launch. As for the platform itself, I've only scratched the surface, so I'm not going to give you my full analysis here in this moment because I haven't really had a chance to sit and think about what I think about some of these issues and how it fits and talk to people who are experts in the field on a couple of these different things and get their thoughts on it. I haven't had a chance to do that yet. So you're going to get my full analysis and the full analysis of Roger Kransky, Cheryl Miller, and Steve Holland coming up on Friday on the Friday Roundtable. So I hope and very much would be pleased if you could download and tune into that particular edition of the podcast. This edition of the podcast, however, has to come to a close because we are right up against it. And to pull the curtain back just a little bit more, I've got a newscast on ClassicRock981.com and ClassicRock981, the radio station, that is going to be airing very shortly. So I've got to get going on that. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of the Craig Needles podcast, which, of course, you can find at ClassicRock981.com, LondonNewsToday.ca, and on your very favorite podcast app. Once again, the Craig Needles podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London, Lifestyle with a Drive. New Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London, 1065 Warncliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. That is all for this week, or this portion of the first part of this week on the Craig Needles podcast. More coming up on Friday. We'll talk to you then.
The Craig Needles podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.